C1B 1 and 2.
Number 7A.
So, we have seen that man has not the soul inside of him, but that God, which is outside of body, that God is the soul of man. That leads right further to the tone of principle by saying, all right, then man's true soul, man's true ego, is therefore a deduction from the ego God, the soul of God, and therefore the true soul of man has a principle in the soul of God, in the ego God, whereas the mortal man with a mortal soul or the belief in a mortal soul has no principle behind it. So we come to principle, where we have seen now the statement of limitlessness has to be brought back to a principle, whereas to show that everything that is limited, like a human soul, has no principle behind itself. The epitome I have given here, therefore, reads the ego man. You see, it's with a capital E, ego. The ego man is the image and likeness of the ego God, the divine principle. So we can bring back the idea back to its principle, whereas sin and mortality, which is the sinful soul, has no principle. That's my epitome of what Mrs. Eddy explains here, and now I'm going to show what she says here, and you just listen if she does not justify this epitome. Under the marginal heading of God and His image, we already begin to see that now the image is brought back to its principle, and so she speaks about the one ego, mind, spirit, soul, as God, that one ego is infinite individuality and is reflected in individual men and things. So individual man has as its principle God, the infinite individuality. The ego man, therefore, she says, is a reflection of the ego God, is therefore the image and likeness, you always hear the tone of soul running right through it, is the image and likeness of perfect mind, spirit, divine principle. Always bringing back to the synonymous term, always going back. The moment we touch principle, we always see that an idea is brought back to its principle that lies behind it. That's typical for Christianity. In Christianity, the main point is always to show idea, but idea always brought back into its principle, and never idea being isolated, but always to be an idea that is backed up by its principle, that can be deduced from its principle, that has its foundation in principle, that has its cause and origin in principle. That's typical Christianity always. So as she is saying that really the true soul of man is in a principle, is in the synonymous terms, in mind, spirit, soul, as the divine principle of man, that therefore the true ego man, the divine ego man, is only a reflection of that one ego God, she will have to show that the opposite, that which is limited and therefore at the point of soul is sinful, that has no principle behind itself. Therefore it cannot work eternally. So she brings in the counterfeit sense and speaks about that the mind, which is beneath a skull bone, can you see the limitation? Mind limited to a skull bone, says that, she doesn't say that has a principle, but now she gives, is a myth. See, that's the counterfeit of principle, is a myth, a false conception as to mind and man. A misconceived sense. Therefore, she says, sin and mortality, the counterfeit of soul, sin and mortality, have no principle, is without actual origin. See, has no cause, no origin, no foundation, no rightful existence. And in this way, can you see, always in principle, She gives to the idea a foundation, so that it can stand on. And the negative, and she then speaks about the negative, she always tears the foundation away under their feet, under its feet. They finished always saying, you seem to be something, but you have no foundation to stand upon. All what you stand upon is a myth. It's just a misconceived concept. You have nothing to stand upon. Once we have done that, you see, always, and you have taken away the foundation of something, then it cracks and it falls to pieces. So you come to life. So that demonstration of having no foundation is always death and decay and doom. So we come to life, and therefore she says, the infinite, the unbounded, the limitless, is always eternal, whereas the finite is temporal. Isn't that very easy to follow in the line? Does she actually say so, or is this just Max that tries to put over something? Well, let's see what the text says. The text speaks about, in the marginal heading, about the true new idea. And you already see something about the newness. And therefore she says that we should not put the new into the old. You get the sense of life, newness of life, not into the old. The new wine into old bottles. Soul into man. The infinite into the finite. You have a sense of soul, not to put the greater into the lesser, the new into the old. The real life and material life, can you hear now the tone of life? The real life and the material life never unite. You can't put them together. Then she gives over a lengthy description, a description of that circle of life, without beginning, without ending. And then she gives us a counterpoint, the description of the straight line that is finite, beginning, end, and the circle and the straight line never touch each other. There is no mingling. The one is self-existent within itself. The moment you have a foundation in principle, the unlimited is without beginning and end. It's the new paradigm that is shown. You can't put that into the old paradigm of the limited sense. The limited sense is like a straight line. It begins and ends. Everything that is limited has a beginning and has an end. So by definition, really, the finite must be temporal and therefore must decay. So we can see the moment we, through principle, we bring an idea back to its principle and see it as founded in principle. We see it is like a circle then in life, because we can always draw from principle, constantly draw from principle. There, it never begins nor ends. It is an eternal expression of that principle, whereas the limited has by definition a beginning and an end, and therefore is finite and temporal. So we have that circle and that straight line. What are we going to do with it now? Now we have to take the subtone of truth, which says the circle is going to dissolve the belief in a straight line. The true concept now dispels the false belief of intelligence and life in matter. That's how I summarized it. And now she gives, really here again, an explanation of why error disappears before the truth. It's, I think I said it before, I can't quite remember, did I say that when we always come to the subtone of truth, it's in every subtone, it's very interesting, because she seems to be able to show there the reason why truth dispels error. Not just saying truth dispels error. This is also true, but it's a statement. And just accepting that statement, we accept it as belief and not as understanding. Somehow she has to reason out why truth dispels error. Here she has to show why the limitlessness dispels limitation, so to say. How does she reason it out? She starts naturally right out again with the limited concept, because that's her subject, and says matter has no inherent power, has no life, has no inherent intelligence. So she takes away the concept of life, substance, intelligence in matter, that therefore these ideas are never limited in matter, that power, life, intelligence can never be in something, in matter, in a brain, in a body, in a person. But she asks then, but why do people believe that? She says, well, this is the error of so-called intelligence of mortal mind. This is an error of the so-called intelligence of mortal mind. Mortal mind seems to know so much. Mortal mind seems to be very, very intelligent. Our human mind seems to be terrific intelligent. Huh? We know things. We know how they are. No matter if in 20 years or in 1,000 years everything is looked at very differently. But we still feel we are really big shots. We know things. And so she brings back really intelligence to mortal mind and says, this is really what happens, that in mortal mind, the intelligence of mortal mind seems to limit everything. Mortal mind cannot, by its own definition, think in unlimited concepts. So what are you going to do with that error called the intelligence of mortal mind? You have to state the fact about it. What then is the truth about it? And so she says, you know, the truth about it is the intelligence of immortal mind. It's a very interesting statement here for combination of synonymous term. You know, we see in the textbook that he very rarely defines one synonymous term through the other. Usually she defines a synonymous term through ideas of that synonymous term, but not through another synonymous term. Here she does it, as she now comes to the point where she says, well, you know, the error naturally is that we believe that intelligence dwells in mortal mind. Therefore, to counteract that very statement, she has to use the very opposite statement, where she says, truth is the intelligence of mind. I think she says, of immortal mind. Truth is the intelligence of immortal mind. See, she defines truth through mind and mind through truth, showing us that if we go out from the intelligence of immortal minds instead of the intelligence of mortal mind, and go out from the intelligence of immortal mind, that is the truth, that tells us the one truth. And if we go out from that one mind and see that is the truth, then the false beliefs have no more any foothold in our consciousness. She always takes away the belief in our consciousness when she wants to resolve any situation. For her, it's always the belief that has to be healed and resolved, not the situation, not the body needs to be healed. The belief that we are sick needs to be healed. So she says that's the trouble, because the prevalent theories say that mind, small m, the thinking mind of the people, is both truth and error. We believe, therefore, that we can think in terms of truth and that we can think in terms of error. That's the prevalent theory. And that is only possible as long as we do not bring back intelligence to a synonymous term called mind. Then mind itself, with a capital M, cannot be both truth and error. Then it can only be one thing, truth. And if it's only one thing, then, she says, thus the true sense of God's power is gained, and the false sense of God's power is lost. So how is error to be wiped out? How is it wiped out? If you go out from the immortal mind, the intelligence of the immortal mind, that can only be conscious of truth, then it cannot be conscious of error. And that dispels error. She goes further then, once she has stated that, she goes on to love, in order to show even something more than that, namely that it becomes impossible to have a limited concept. My epitome is that the unlimited cannot possibly know the limited, and the other way around too, nor can the limited know the unlimited. Can you see the beauty? No, perhaps not, because I'm asking always too much. It's only when one has a good overall view of the whole chapter, you know, that these things then become beautiful. For instance, if you would compare now the subtone of love in the subject that we have taken, you would always see that somehow this point comes out that the opposite, the counterfeit, is not there. You don't have to overcome it. It's not there. See, in mind we had, if you look at the chart on page 6 and take the last horizontal of love, then under mind you could see that all is the manifestation of mind. There is no matter. You don't have to overcome matter. You don't have to destroy matter anymore. There is no matter. When you come to spirit as love, only reflection of good exists. Matter is unknown. As she started out, you know error. Huh? You know error. You know how you know matter, and you know how matter operates, and how you get rid of it. But at this point now, you arrive at the point that matter is unknown. And now here in soul, we come to the point that the unlimited just cannot know the limitations, because it would be a contradiction within itself. Light cannot know darkness. Just not possible. That's always the tone that goes right through the subtone of love, that positive just does not know the opposite, so it not even needs to deal with it, because it has been dealt with it through mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth. And now we come always at love at the point of fulfillment, where we see there is nothing that is being, there is no counterfeit. So here in soul as love, I have epitomized it, I have already quoted it, the unlimited cannot possibly know the limited, nor can the limited know the unlimited. Her reasoning is like this. She goes out and says, it is not rational to say that mind, capital M, mind, dwells in finiteness. That's not rational. Why is it not rational? She says, well, it's just impossible. And so she speaks in the side note about material recognition impossible. Says it's impossible for mind to recognize anything that is limited. And then she gives 5 examples of the impossible. She says, what is impossible? God cannot be limited to man. See, naturally you have always a tone of limitation that comes up. The impossibilities of limitation. God cannot limit it to man. Then the infinite cannot be circumscribed within the finite. Infinite mind cannot return to limits. Mind cannot be in bonds. Mind cannot be manifested through corporeality. Can you hear the impossibility? All about limitations. Impossible to have a knowledge of limitation. Impossible to conceive of limitations. Is it chance that at this point Mrs. Eddy speaks about that impossibility, and all through the textbook then no more? It's not chance. It is the place value of this tone. And then it says, therefore also it is impossible for the material sense, the opposite of soul, to have any unlimited sense. That too is impossible. So she gives a few examples of that. She says that the material senses cannot know God. They cannot give correct testimony to spiritual life. They cannot obtain proof of God. They cannot see, hear, feel, taste, or smell God. And you see, now she gives the impossibility of the physical senses, of the limited senses, to get hold of the unlimited. So she has a real good, she makes a real good break and says, it's impossible to put the infinite into the finite, nor is it possible for the finite to get hold of the infinite. Therefore, she concludes and says, the real senses, which are the senses of soul, the real senses, therefore, are spiritual. They emanate now from mind. He brings it back to the synonymous term. They emanate from mind. Good thoughts pass from God to man, and not from man to God. Therefore, the intercommunication is always from God to man and his idea. So she concludes and says, because that's so, because from the unlimited synonymous term always go out unlimited concepts, namely ideas, it is absolutely impossible that the infinite or the limitless can be aware of limitation. And this solves the problem of limitation. Yes. Shall we run quickly through it, through the seven tones, just as we have it here, summarized in soul, and see, she brings up that great question, is creation limitless, or is it limited, and how does a limitless concept resolve a limited concept? As mind, she says, well, you have to see that the divine mind by itself is unlimited. Mind itself is unlimited, whereas beliefs are always limited. Okay, so you have stated the counterpoint of divine mind, limitless, and mortal mind, limited. Therefore, in spirit, she says, therefore, have only one God. This is the real God, that one God that is unlimited, because belief that is limited does what? Why is it limited? Because it only thinks about dividing, 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 subdividing, subdividing, making gods many, lords many, minds many. Thou shalt have only one God, spirit. Once we have seen that we have only the unlimited spirit or soul, then we see that soul is outside the body, outside of man, that God is the soul of man, and therefore soul, God, never lives in the limited. We have not a personal, individual, finite soul. So soul is supreme outside of corporeality. Therefore, the soul of man is a reflection of the soul of God. The ego man is a reflection of the divine principle or the ego God, whereas sin, sickness, death, mortality have no principle behind itself. They have nothing to stand on that supports them. Consequently, in life, only that which is limitless is eternal. Everything that is finite is temporal. We have to be aware that when we limit something, that we'll see the doom of it, the end of it, very soon. Therefore, in truth, we must have an unlimited concept, a true concept, an unlimited concept, and that unlimited concept is actually that the truth about every erroneous, limited concept, and therefore dispels it. So that finally we only have one standpoint, the standpoint of the unlimited, and that unlimited only sees the unlimited idea and nothing else. Therefore, limitations are unknown to the unlimited. That's the story.